Welcome to the You and Me podcast, the show where we dive deep into the beautiful world of weddings. I'm Laura, the founder of Wanderlust Creative, an international wedding planning and styling company servicing a global collective of loved up couples.
And I'm Andy, the founder of The Bridal Journey, a source of inspiration for brides, and Revealed, a wedding marketplace where brides can buy and sell pre-loved wedding items.
In each episode of the You and Me podcast, we sit down with a real bride who openly shares their unique wedding planning journey. From the excitement of the proposal to the magical moments of her wedding day, we delve deep into the emotions, the challenges, and the triumphs of planning a wedding.
Join us as we celebrate love, offer practical advice, and share the experiences of brides just like you.
Prepare for heartfelt conversations and inspiring stories on the You and Me podcast.
Today on the podcast, we have Cassandra Lucy. Welcome to the podcast, Cass.
Hi, guys.
Now, Cass did the makeup for my wedding, and Laura has worked with Cass quite a number of times as well. So, yeah, I've known Cass since our days at Chadston working retail.
Oh my gosh, feels like a lifetime ago.
How many years ago was that? Maybe
like
15 years, 20 maybe?
Here I am thinking 12.
No, longer than that. And Cass just started doing makeup on, I think you came to, I had a blog called Snob at the time with a friend, Alla, and you came over and did our makeup just as you're kind of starting out. So look at you now.
I know. I think I practiced on you.
Yes, yes. You came. I was living on Pickle Street in Port Melbourne at the time, and Cass used to come over and do my makeup for the races. And now, look, you're just flying. She's just got home from India this morning at 6 a.m. And just jet-setting across the world doing makeup for all the rich and famous.
pretty different world to what we used to live, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Time. So we'll just start with, I know we've touched base on what you do, but can you introduce yourself to our audience?
I am 30 years old. I'm Aussie and I live in London. I'm a hair and makeup artist and I fly all over Europe and the world doing hair and makeup for a lot of bridal and amazing events. And I recently got married in June to, well, my husband, Robbie. And yeah, we're just living in London and yeah. I think that's about it.
So Cass, tell us, this interview is going to be really tough because we know you personally, so we're going to have to remember that not to lead you and just talk like we know each other, like it's a Sunday brunch. But you and Robbie, tell us a little bit about your backstory. How did you guys meet? Where did the proposal unfold? Set the scene of you guys.
Yeah, so I moved to London during the start of COVID in 2020, which feels like a very, very long time ago, but it was, what, 3 years ago now? Mm. I actually hadn't been living in London for very long, and we met and it kind of just went from there. We started off really good friends, and then before we knew it. We were like dating. He proposed in December last year, just before Christmas. We were in Tasmania. We actually went home for my sister's wedding, which Laura, you were the wedding planner. And so we went to Tasmania on a little holiday and he proposed on a hike. And I know you girls know me, but you know, you always.
I'm having a mental image of you just complaining the whole time on this hike.
Yeah. So I actually was so angry because he's like, let's go on this walk. It's really amazing. It's to a beach. And I was like, oh my God, yeah, that sounds so good. He didn't tell me it was a hike. I had only put on my sunscreen in the morning. I didn't bring a top up, I didn't bring a hat. So we were on this hike. This is like so wild because now I think about it, I'm like, why did I say yes? He obviously didn't know me at all.
red flag
number one. He took me on this hike and at the start of the hike kind of said the track, and I was looking at it and I was like, this is not like an hour or two walk. This is like a 5 hour like round trip.
Yeah.
And we had started on the hike and we were probably an hour or two in, and then we finally see people coming the other direction and they were in full hiking gear, like sticks, backpacks, full supplies. And I was like, where are we? We were like, it was the wilderness. And I cracked it because I couldn't get back on my own. He wouldn't take me back. So I didn't talk to him for like 2 hours of the hike. And it was really funny because then he proposed and I was like kind of laughing but still really upset. And I had been hiking for so long. Well, you know when you walk for ages, your hands get really like chubby, like fat, you know, like
yeah, they're like fluidy and they're hot and it's like they're down the ring at the side. Did not fit.
Oh no. I didn't wear it. Anyway, I was like devastated.
Did he think this through, did he?
Well, you know, stressed.
No, he was like, I had to do it without you even thinking about like me proposing. And I was like, no, I definitely not in my wildest dreams did I think that it would happen then. You know, he had plenty of dinners the 3-4 nights before at amazing places he could have proposed. But anyway.
We digress.
But you know what? To get all the way from your house to, was the holiday to Tassie before or after Rach's wedding?
After Rachel's
wedding. So he has like carried this ring for how long?
He actually got it made in Australia from a jeweler.
Did he?
Yes. So I, like when I had first started doing makeup, I went to New York with a friend of mine to kind of like seek, I wanted to move to New York. And I met, you know, friends of friends, we were all hanging out. And these two guys, one was a jeweler and one was a diamond like saucer.
Mm-hmm.
And they were showing me things and I was like, you're going to make my wedding ring one day. And I always said to Robbie, like, if you're going to get a ring made, go to them. So he got it made actually in Australia, which is really special. And he got it sent to my parents' house. So everyone knew but me.
Oh no way.
Well, my dad did anyway. I don't know if my mum 100% knew.
Oh my God, that's special. Okay, the hike is forgiven.
Hike is forgiven. Ring's amazing. So I was like, fine.
Just having like images of you guys not being able to get back or lost and being airlifted out of there. Sorry. Like winched up. Bride gets engaged and lost in the wilderness.
Well, half an hour later, I slipped on a log and I actually had like a full gash in my forehead. Sure I had concussion and couldn't take any nice engagement photos because I had this full gash on my forehead.
Oh my gosh. So that's like, right, it can kind of only come up from there, right? Like everything close like- there is going to be wonderful and amazing. So you said, you mentioned earlier that you got engaged in December but married in June the following year. That is quick, girl.
That is 6 months.
Yeah. What was the thought process
behind
it? Yeah.
Tell us, what was the thought process behind it?
So my sister had just gotten married in December. She got married in Melbourne, where we're from. My partner's English, from the country in England. So it was always going to be hard wherever we kind of got married. And actually, it was really sad. Not long after we got engaged, his dad passed away. So we kind of felt as though we needed something to like, it was just like we had this conversation. It was like, we can either wait a few years or we can kind of do it quickly and get it out of the way and kind of just keep on living our lives and not have to stress for years about planning a wedding. You know, being in the industry, I know what it's like. It's really consuming. You know, I work weddings nearly every couple of days. So we decided we were going to do something really small. And to do something small, I felt like I had to do it overseas, because I wanted his parent, like his mum and sister, to be there. Australia's a bit too far. And I guess I just do destination weddings so often. I felt like I couldn't not have a destination wedding.
Yeah.
And there was a place that we loved, and we got married in Puglia, which was like one of our first holiday destinations that we went to, and we just loved it.
One of the most amazing places I reckon I've ever been.
It's something different. It's getting really popular now, which I love because it's so different from the rest of Italy. It was either going to be, I knew I wanted to do it in Italy, but Florence, you know, and Tuscany is amazing. But I felt that I needed something that also would be attractive for like holidayers and everyone traveling. And I felt like Tuscany is so far between, like they're so far between the little towns. I felt like it was a bit difficult logistically. So I wanted it to be quite easy. So we picked Puglia and it was like, I wish I could do it again.
And obviously you attend weddings, as you said, like every couple of days. So you decided to get married in Puglia. Did you basically, because you got married, engaged and married in such a short amount of time, I'd assume that you had basically had a pretty good idea of what exactly you wanted, who your suppliers were going to be, having worked with an array of people. Was it like pretty easy to kind of nut that down?
It was so easy for me to kind of figure out exactly what I wanted. It took like 3 months of confirming this is what we wanted to do and then 3 months of like proper planning it. I feel like it's that stage of like scoping out what you want to do and then the, you know, because we did it within 6 months, it was kind of like in two chunks. You know, finding a dress within such a short period of time was like probably the most challenging thing. But for a venue, we actually had visited a place and absolutely fallen in love with it and really tried to make it work, and it did work in the end. But there were some places I really loved, but you know, it was such a short turnaround. The answer was pretty much we're booked.
And being destination locations as well, it's like it's not just a weekend booking that they're looking at. They have someone in on a Monday, out on a Thursday, someone in on a Thursday, out on a Sunday. Like it just, it turns because it's a destination location. So you don't have that flexibility. You think you do. You're like, oh, we'll just do it on a Wednesday. But so does everybody else who's traveling there.
Exactly. And yeah. I kind of knew that going in. So Robbie's a school teacher. So we had 1 week in his school holidays that my parents could visit the UK or could come overseas. That worked for like my immediate family and him being a school teacher. So we actually had no choice. We had 1 week to do it. And that was the week and it was really great because the venue that I actually picked don't usually do weddings. They're kind of getting into them at the time. And because it was a smaller wedding, we had, I think, 32 guests in the end. They were really willing. Like, they were so great. I have never worked with such a, like, easygoing team. They were willing to do whatever. They weren't super fussy. They weren't demanding. And it was kind of new for everyone. I'd never gotten married before myself, but I had a pretty good idea of what's needed. So I was kind of giving some direction, but then they were really willing to do, you know, go above and beyond and help where they could.
So Cass, do you think that did your knowledge of the wedding industry and what goes into it and, you know, watching like some of the most stressful brides I have are the most stressed sitting in your chair. It's always in the morning. It's always when they're looking at the weather. It's always when they're getting the anxious anticipation.
You're so right.
Do you think that because you've witnessed it for so many years and you've got such an intimate knowledge of the industry, did that make it easier for you to approach the planning, or did you find that your knowledge, having so much of it, actually made you question more things or make it harder?
I think it made it easier because, like how you said, you know, I've done so many weddings. I feel like I've personally gotten married 500 times before I actually got married because I really do invest in my brides and I go along the ride with them. And, you know, I'm trying to be as helpful as I can in the morning and getting as involved as I can. I don't just sit there and do makeup. I try and be really, you know, like
a bridesmaid. I mean, I've known you for a long time, but when you did my makeup for my wedding, it was like having another friend there to chat with the bridesmaids, do our makeup. Like you kind of just assimilate yourself within the bridal party, I felt anyway. And then one of the girls wasn't happy with the hair because we had a separate hairdresser. So you were like fixing that up secretly in the bathroom.
You know, some of the families I work with, I still talk to them today. Like, so you understand their stresses on the day. And because I've done so many, I feel like I have been in every single situation you can possibly be in. So I kind of knew what was really important and what would make the day work.
And what was that on that note? Because, I mean, you've had so much experience with all these brides. So what was like things that you took away from sitting there in the mornings with them, getting them ready? What were you like, I want this, but I definitely don't want that? What was it from all your years of experience working with brides?
Yeah, so just like simple things. So one of my friends, he really wanted to photograph my wedding, and he's an amazing photographer. His name is Ben Wheeler and he's UK based. And he's like, Cass, I need to do your wedding. It'll be so much fun. And he had a wedding somewhere else the next day. And he was like, but, you know, I'll fly in, I'll fly out, it'll be fine. And I was just thinking, God, I would love you to do my wedding. But I've been in this situation too many times where there's a flight missed, tight turnarounds. I didn't want any stress, any drama. So as soon as I heard that, I was like, impossible, not going to work. And just went with someone else. So it was just those little things in those decision-making processes that I was like, no, I'm not going to risk that. Because I know what Europe is like when you've been working around here for a while. I wanted a florist that I didn't have to fly in from another location, because logistically, you know, they don't know. I don't know. It's just really hard. I tried to have as many Italian suppliers as I could, because I just know that they can do a better job because they can speak the language. They can negotiate better for you. So my florist, she's Italian based and she was amazing. And she bought everything, didn't have any problems, knew what's what. And same with like my other vendors, like the entertainment, catering, everything was like local as possible. But I made sure I had worked with them before, or, you know, they were highly recommended, because I just didn't want anything to go wrong, because a lot of the time it is when it's like something that someone hasn't done before. You know, I've had entertainment companies come in, fly in like 10 people, and then they realize that they didn't have a generator or something, and you know, like, not what you want.
So all like utilizing local suppliers, and I reckon that applies to wherever you kind of get married. Like, you know, they know you're not going to ask an Italian to try and cook, you know, Asian dishes and expect them to be perfect. You want them to be able to, if you're going to go somewhere, you want to be able to embrace the location that you're going, and that's what they do best. One question I did have for you though, because it was such a tight turnaround, you mentioned before, was your dress. So that is something that, you know, some people don't just go to a local shop or go to the easiest place that they can find and get it. And the dress question is always on the top of people's minds, especially like, okay, you've got a destination. How are you even getting it there? So start from the process of your dress. Did you get it made in London or?
So I was like, I knew that I was like, okay, we can do this, on that week in June. I was like, I can pull together the supplies. I knew I could do it, only because I've, you know, seen it so many times. It's like, I felt like I could have done with my eyes closed, almost pulled something together. But then one thing was like the dresses. And I was just like, what am I going to wear? So I went and tried on a bunch of dresses. And I could have bought off the rack. I have a really big bust. You know, I'm not a size like 8. So I knew that I couldn't just walk in somewhere and something be perfect. So that was something I actually did stress about, because everywhere wanted to charge me between 25 and 35% more because of a small turnaround.
Yeah.
I went shopping in London with one of my girlfriends, and, you know, a 6,000 pound dress turned into like a 10,000 pound dress. And I was like, I was just mind blown. And I was like, what am I going to do? A friend of mine who had made my mum's dress for my sister's wedding, she works at Ali Sophically, I think is how you say it.
Mm-hmm.
And she's one of like the head construction seamstresses there, and she's incredible. And she was like, I'll make it for you. She's based in Melbourne. And I was like, how are we ever going to do this? Like, it's not going to work. She had my measurements from my sister's wedding.
Oh, perfect.
So I didn't try my wedding dress on until 4 weeks before my wedding. I flew her to London to make my dress. She had made the base. And, you know, I thought I would lose so much weight before my wedding. So I was like, this dress is going to be huge. It was exactly the same. I had not changed my weight. it actually fitted like a glove. And then we just like tweaked it in my apartment, which was really lucky. But if I didn't have her, I think it would have been way more stressful.
Oh my God, stressful hearing about it.
Well, I kept on kind of thinking to everyone was stressed around me, and all my clients were like, my God, Cass, where's your dress? What are you doing? And I was like, oh, she arrives in like a couple of weeks, you know. And they were just like, what are you going to do if it doesn't fit? And I was like, well, you know, I'll just have to figure it out. And it did work in the end, thank goodness. But the only option was really to buy off the rack, which wasn't my first preference, and get it tailored. But lucky I didn't have to do that. But yeah.
And
But you know what I did?
It always really works out.
I traveled with it, and how many times have I seen it happen where someone dirties their wedding dress in transit? I thought I was so smart, had it in its like bag and everything, and I put it on the back of my luggage and was wheeling it around and didn't realize that the dirt from the floor had gone through the bag and dirtied my entire dress. Thank you. Goodness.
Oh my God,
so the girl who made my dress, I actually convinced her to come to my wedding because she was in Europe traveling at the time. So I begged her to come to my wedding. Thank God she did, because she actually fixed it. And it was like this whole patch of it was black.
Oh my goodness.
So that's a tip for brides traveling. Wrap it in so much plastic that literally nothing will ruin.
Oh my God. Cask. But see, this is the thing, isn't it? We learn something every single event you go to or you do. You learn something new every single time you do something. Now, Cass, you are a world-renowned makeup artist. You travel the globe for the job that you've got. Let us in on some tips.
I think our brides
want to
hear the tips.
Makeup,
do's and don'ts.
Do's and don'ts. Prep
work. Did you
do
your own makeup?
I did. I did my own hair and makeup. Would I do it again? Probably not.
Okay.
I am a super fussy. I know you girls know how fussy I am. Even when I'm so critical of my own work, you know, let alone other people's work, I'm, you know, probably a nightmare to work with. So I knew I had to do my own hair and makeup, but it was so stressful because I had my mom, I had my sister, I had my mother-in-law, my sister-in-law. I had someone come to do their hair and makeup, and they were still like, frustrating me about being like, do you think this is the right eyeshadow? Does my hair look okay? And then I realized I had like 20 minutes to do my own makeup, and I was like, my gosh, I had planned this in my head. It was going to be the most nice, relaxing morning. I was going to sit in front of the mirror. I ended up like doing my makeup in like a little mirror. Anyway, it was but what would I give my tips to my brides? So I started my skincare pretty much from the minute I knew I was going to get married that year. So I thought that's like my most important thing. It was just like getting my skin to the best possible way, because I know that good skin translates to good.
And is everybody different, Cass, in terms of their skin prep? Like, would you suggest brides go to
any specific facials
What would you suggest? Is everyone the same? Do you just start on a routine, or is it like you have to go to see someone for your skin and then you start on what you've got?
You do have to go see someone. I think it's really important. Like, I don't think I could give someone a regime without having a professional look at their skin. But I do recommend hydrofacials prior to weddings. Like,
yeah,
regardless if they're doing skin prep and they're doing laser genesis or if they're doing microneedling, you know, I can tell you, I've had probably a bride try everything under the sun. But the best outcomes are just getting the skin hydrated, plumped, and texture is the most important. To me, texture is so important. It's more important than like getting rid of like rosacea or, you know, all of that kind of thing, because you can cover rosacea quite easily and pimples can be covered. It's the texture that's like the number one thing that will make a difference. And I think hydrofacials are really good. So if you can get to a good hydrofacialist, which pretty much everywhere does them these days, that's a really, really good treatment.
Cass, I wish our listeners could see you talk about makeup. It's so nice to see someone like so passionate about what they do, and like the way you're just describing what to do. I wish they could see.
Hydrofacial.
Yeah, hydrofacial. And another one that I really think is important is making sure your hair color is fresh, because I don't know you guys, but as we get older and stuff and people get grays and hair texture changes, getting a gloss and a tint and getting it like well looked after prior to the wedding really can make a difference on your wedding hair.
Okay.
So I would really recommend seeing your hairdresser in the weeks before your wedding and getting a gloss or a tint or a toner. Makes such a difference to your wedding hair. It'll make it look so much healthier. And then doing a trial with your makeup artist, I think it's really important.
And I have a question for you, because I wasn't sure about this for my wedding. Spray tan on your face. Yes or no?
Neither here nor there. It depends on your skin type, but in general, no. Like if I was having someone fly in and I wasn't doing a trial beforehand, I would say no.
It can kind of collect in the dry spots or look very uneven. So I suppose if you can match it with the neck.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. A good makeup artist can always match. So you shouldn't have a problem, but, I know this is not what everyone wants to hear, but because it's so stressful in the weeks leading up to your wedding, you can have the best skin in the months leading up, but stress sometimes brings out pimples, a little rash, happens all the time. But brides shouldn't freak out about that, because there's just nothing you can do. And I try and stress so much. Sometimes if you can't change it, you can't stress about it, because it's just going to ruin your day. So if you can like minimize all those risks, for example, sometimes I break out when I get a spray tan. Don't get a spray tan. Do you know what I mean?
Facts.
I'm pretty harsh, but it's the truth. Like, sometimes when I get my eyebrows done, I break out, but I got my eyebrows done because, you know, I need to get my eyebrows done, and they get it done 3 days before their wedding and they got a breakout. It's like, you know, just think everything through, because it's such a, it's such a special time. You don't want to be stressing about something that can be avoided, but also it gets to a point where you have to stop stressing and just run with it. Like weather, oh gosh, I can't even begin how many tears I've had on wedding mornings about weather. Mm. And it's the one thing you literally can't change.
Cass, on all your experience, we've spoken so much about the logistics of planning a destination wedding in this, you know, discussion, which I think is really good because a lot of people are doing it. What is the one tip of advice that you would give couples to think about and consider for their wedding day? And what is the one thing you personally would do differently?
Okay, so the one thing I would do different, I think they kind of go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. So the one thing I would do differently was I actually got a local wedding planner to help me, which ended up being probably the worst thing I did. I thought, how I said earlier, keep it local, because they can negotiate and they can organize things. They're like feet on the ground. And I was so busy leading up to my wedding. I didn't want the stress of, a catering trying to contact me, I was doing so many amazing weddings in the lead up. I didn't want it to take away from any of my brides. And that ended up being a really bad decision I made, because I should have picked someone who I'd worked with before or who I had trusted, because she wasn't my style, but I thought okay. I had such an amazing florist and venue. I was like, how bad can it be?
Yeah. Yep.
Well, let me tell you, it can be bad.
And do you know what? That is, I suppose, a consideration. And, you know, a lot of people who aren't within this industry ask me, they're like, why do people fly you halfway around the world? Why? There are English-speaking Italians, there are English-speaking French. It's not as if you're you. Why do people do this? And I think that's, you know, that's interesting to hear from somebody in the industry, one, but also on the ground and got married yourself, because everything's a risk, isn't it?
It's so important. You know, I get asked the same thing. Why does someone fly you when they can? I'm sure there's a makeup artist there. And it's kind of like the same answer. It's like, no, because like they feel comfortable with me and they want my services because they like my style. And I did the opposite for my wedding, and I can't believe I did. Like, I regret it so much. And the price difference wasn't huge in the end of the day anyway, but it was what the feelings that it brought with the wrong decision, like, were really hard. Like, looking back on my wedding, I still am like, oh, you know, for like little things, like went completely MIA before I walked down the aisle. My best friend had flown her husband, her, you know, 1-year-old child, and her mum over from Australia, you know, for him to be my little flower boy. And she wasn't even there to get him to walk down the aisle. So I was walking down the aisle and he was just standing there. And I was like, what are you doing? And he was like, the dad was like, does he go now? And I was like, halfway down the aisle. And I was like, is she?
Oh, yeah. Little things, isn't it?
It's the little things that that amount to how you feel on your wedding day. And you know, I've had so many brides, you know, I hear everything being a makeup artist, you know, it's like you tell your hairdresser everything. Trust me, the brides tell the makeup artist everything, you know, and it's sometimes hard to play good cop, bad cop, because, you know, you might be friends with the wedding planner, but then you're hearing the bride, you know, her, how upset she is about things. There've been very few brides when I've done destination weddings that have actually 100% enjoyed their wedding planners. And every time they have enjoyed it, it's because they've picked someone who they've probably bought from home or someone they've admired, and have really wanted to work with them, and they've spent a bit more, and it's been a really enjoyable process. Every other bride have probably picked a local or picked someone because of pricing, and they are always complaining, like, she didn't do this, or she doesn't get it, oh my god, look what she decided.
Yeah, and I think the communication breakdown is sometimes hard too, because I know how much Laura puts in with her brides, and it's all about that pre-planning, isn't it, the 12 months or 6 months or whatever before the wedding. And Laura's just in constant communication with her brides, emails, meeting up with them, phone calls all day, every day. You know, she, when we're recording the podcast, she might sometimes have to jump on an email or respond to a bride. Like, she doesn't stop. So you can imagine with the time difference, you write them an email and then they don't return it to 48 hours later. And whilst you're in Europe, there sometimes can be, as you said, you found that brides who take their planners from someone they loved or someone from home, it's that communication the 12 months prior, not for the day, when you're working with the suppliers on the ground that are local.
Oh, 100%. And yeah. I don't want to sound like Aussie's the best, but I can't explain to you.
Well.
And this is, I'm not biased, but, and this is really interesting, is that I have brides from all around the world. I have a lot of American clients, a lot of British, a lot of, you know, Dutch. I have brides from all around the world. And sometimes I'll get on a phone call before they, you know, pay a deposit, just to, like, I always try and scope them out and have a chat. And they also do the same. They spend a lot of money. They want to, like, make sure they get along with me and, you know, we're vibing. They hear my accent, and I tell you, sometimes they just have to hear my accent to be like, Australians know how to do a wedding. We have a reputation of having really amazing weddings in Australia, and I think that a lot of the weddings that we do are very, you know, they kind of go viral and flowers are amazing. You know, Aussies do good weddings, and it's amazing that, like, sometimes someone just has to hear that I'm Australian to be like, oh no, she gets it. Like, she knows what's called. And they book you straight away. And Laura, I don't know if it's the same with you, but I really wish I had just gone with someone who I felt that instant, she'll get it, you know, she knows what's called, rather than trying to force someone to kind of get my style. I think that's what I went wrong.
There's a different style, isn't there?
Yeah, and I think someone kind of thinking, because I'm paying them to do a job, they'll just do what I want. But actually, it's not like that. And I don't know how to explain it any better than pick someone on based on their style and their vibe. Don't pick someone based on what you think that they can do in your within your scope, because they're not going to get it.
That is the advice that I give every single client. If they can't afford a supplier, either cut down what you're asking for them so they can't afford you to do them and their bridal party, then get their bridal party done by somebody else and only go through you. But don't try and sub a style. And it, I suppose this is so important for creatives. It's like you're a trade, right? You have gone to school, you have studied, you practice. A lot of creatives are a trade. Florists, cake artistry, graphic designers. This is a trade. So they have all got their unique style. And if you can't afford the investment, it doesn't mean that they're, well, this could be controversial, because you can't afford the investment, it's not because they're too expensive. It's because their costing reflects their trade and their experience. And if you can't afford a particular hair and makeup artist, say, for everyone, then dial it down, afford it for you, and sub out the cost for somebody potentially cheaper for someone else, because you are 100% right. Trying to fit a square peg into a round hole, so picking you because, or a creative that is cheaper because they love your style and trying to make them into your style, will never work, because nothing is as good as the original.
100%. And I felt so silly being preaching that as my job and not making it like, and then making a decision and not thinking about how it could reflect. Like, I kind of just did it without thinking about, like, I didn't marry the two together. And I felt like that was my biggest mistake. And I'm like, oh gosh, like, I thought I would get it all right. I don't think any bride ever gets it all right. But I just thought I had so much experience. How could I not? Yeah. But that was the one thing. And you're right. Like, I live in London. London's a really expensive place to live. So my prices are naturally a lot higher than what Australian girls are charging. You know, some Australian girls come now, when I first started doing destinations, no Aussies were traveling to do destination hair and makeup. It was you picked someone locally. And I feel like when I started doing it, it became a bit of a trend. Now girls are coming over doing a couple of months, and they're charging like pretty good rates. And I have girls come back to me and be like, oh, your rate is this much, and then this other girl from Australia is charging this much. Like, do you think you could do it? And I'm like, you're not paying for literally me just to paint your face for that hour and a half. You're paying for a package that is so much more than that. You know, you're paying for my experience of traveling around with a kit. You're paying for my experience of working in foreign places and making it work every single time.
And this comes back to what you were saying before, Cass, about, you know, you've got to work with people that do realize there's not a generator in place and account for that, or do realize that if you're going to cut it, you know, tight on flight time, then you could potentially not make it, or do realize that this is a really important makeup kit. I've got to take it carry on. I can't take it check in because if it's lost, we're screwed. So, you know, there's lots of things that go into it, and it's, yeah, it's a really interesting point. And I think it's important, you know, and that can apply to weddings locally for you as well.
Yeah, of course. Like when we were planning our wedding, you know, Robbie, he gave me a budget. You know, as they say, double it and that's your real budget. and I was, we were talking, he still doesn't even know how much we paid for flowers because, you know, I just had to, you know, pay it indiscretionally. Like,
you know. Don't listen to this episode, Robbie.
Yeah, he won't. And I could not find a florist that I loved, So I had my Italian florist who lived in Florence. She was so amazing. Like, she's so creative and amazing. I knew I had to work with her from the minute I met her at another wedding. She gets it. And I was like,
and who
I
was need this her. Florist, Cass?
Her name's Alessandra, but it's Fluida Designs.
Yes. Yeah.
She's really amazing. And you know, when you just know, it was just the one thing that I knew. And we had organized DJs and entertainment and stuff, and everything was building up in costs, and we were getting quotes for all different things. You know, I wanted to do like a welcome bag, and when people checked into their accommodation, I wanted it to be like an amazing hamper and all these things. Like, I wanted everyone to get a beach bag. And then I thought, okay, what's actually really important is how my wedding, like the table looked, because I felt like that was a really important thing to me. So we ended up doing Spotify. We made a Spotify playlist for our reception. So we completely cut a DJ. We cut like the whole thing that comes with that. So then we just invested in the florist. And I didn't have any welcome bags. I didn't do, you know, all of the things that I really wanted to do because it would look cool, you know. And instead, we just invested in a couple of main things. And I'm so glad I did that. Instead of like spacing everything out and trying to make everything work, I made sure that I was so happy with my florist. And then everything else, you know, worked, but it wasn't, you know, the most important thing.
It's all about prioritizing, isn't it? And people aren't really going to probably give a shit about the welcome bag on their bed. Most of them probably wouldn't take it home.
Exactly. And that's like, you know, that's the one thing that I was kind of like, oh, I want everyone to get this really cool, like, woven bag that I found in Spain. And by the time I added, you know, all of the postage and stuff, I was like, people aren't even going to take this home because they can't even fit it into their luggage. I was like, scrap that.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know what? You've got to dream big at the beginning. Start with, it's almost like the reverse of the budget, isn't it? You start with a small budget, you end up spending a lot. You start with all these things, you end up on your wedding day just with the things that mean something to you.
100%. And I would do my wedding, you know, even like my cake, I left it up to the venue and I sent them one photo actually that I had screenshot from the bridal journey. And that's where so much of my inspo came from. And I literally screenshot it and I was like, this is cute. And she was like, okay. And then like 2 days before the wedding, they were like, so what flavors do you want of the cake? And, you know, I think my cake costs like €200. It was massive. And I was like, I think whatever you think is good. I was like, I really don't mind. I was like, the only thing is that my sister-in-law is like anaphylactic to nuts. So no nuts. And I just wanted cherries on top. And it was the best wedding cake. And it was €200.
I thought that was like, going to end up in a disaster story. I thought you were going to be like,
no,
the cake?
Like, because what? I let them do what they thought would be best. And I didn't like, you know, try and make them do something that wouldn't work. And I thought that was a really good outcome because I was like, oh, I didn't have to worry about that. You know what I mean? And it was just like something that someone would worry about. Sometimes you don't need to, like, if you just trust.
Yeah, you've got to trust. I think that's so important with any suppliers that you work with for your wedding. You just, I think even with you, Cass, I was like, send me some photos. What do you think we should do for my makeup? You've done my makeup before. What do you think would suit a bride on the wedding day? I think often people try and micromanage their suppliers when you often need to just let them, they're the experts. They do this every day, all the time. Like, and obviously with some guidance, but I think sometimes it's important to listen to them because, as you said, like, they got the cake spot on. They make these cakes for these weddings all the time. They know what the comments and feedbacks are from wedding guests, if it's eaten, if it's not eaten. So they know what works and what doesn't.
Oh, Andy, you're so right. Like, you just got to trust your suppliers. I remember with your wedding, you actually flew me from London. I actually think I arrived I remember we had organized it. So I had flown in, I think it was 3 days before your wedding.
Yeah.
3 or 4 days before. And you were kind of so chill. And it was like just after COVID. So we were kind of like, are the flights going to go? And you're like, I think it was like a month before, you're like, should I book someone else just like as a backup, or do you reckon it'll be fine? And I was like, it's up to you. And you're like, no, it'll be fine. Like, you had so much trust and faith that it would be fine. We didn't do a trial. And I thought your makeup was amazing on your wedding day.
It looked very good.
You know, and I think it worked out so well because you didn't put the pressure on me as a supplier. So I wasn't freaking, does that yeah. make sense? Like, I yeah. wasn't freaking out because you didn't put that pressure on me. And I think that's really important to remember as a bride. The more pressure you put on your suppliers to be perfect, they will not be perfect because you're kind of creating a false, you know, like narrative.
Yeah.
Yeah, an expectation that, you know, and we do spend so much money on our weddings. I totally get it. Like, we spend so much. We want it to be perfect because we're like, we're spending so much money. This should be amazing. But in reality, like, you know, it's not like it's not like we're saving lives. We're trying to make the best.
Yeah, when it comes down, no one is doing open heart surgery. So we just need it's fun. It's just, we all need to calm down. Just relax a little bit.
And enjoy it. Like, if you're calm about wanting to enjoy your wedding, your suppliers are going to want you to enjoy the wedding. Because I promise you, the brides who are so painful in the lead up to their wedding, you almost, without sounding awful, you don't despise being there, but you're not 100% happy being there because it's just been so stressful in the lead up as a supplier. But the weddings that the brides are so comfortable, they're so chill with me as a supplier, I want to be there. I want to give 110%. Like, and sometimes I'll work until midnight doing a touch up just because I want it to be so perfect for them, because I feel like I want to do that, not because she's been like emailing me, what time are you going to leave? I want to touch up at this time. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if that happens in all of, like, for all vendors, but I do feel that way. Like, your photographer might be an 8-hour package, but I promise you, if you give them the respect and the freedom to do their craft the way that they can do it best, they will not clock off after 8 hours. They will make sure they get 100%. Spot, and then they'll leave when they feel like they're done. And that might be a 10-hour package and you're not going to pay a cent more.
Yeah. There you go. Trust and respect your vendors and it will be reciprocated, really.
Well, maybe we should like make a slogan for that, because we can change your wedding industry.
We can. That is offline, because we could actually sit here and talk to you all day and no joke, we'd release like a Joe Rogan podcast length episode. It's like 3.5 hours.
Smoking weed at the same time.
Oh my God, Cass, thank you so much for joining us, honey. Congratulations again on your wedding day. Thank you for the insider vendor tips. I think that hair and makeup can sometimes be that's either the first thing they book or one thing that they stress about towards the, you know, middle to end of the planning. So it was really good to get all your tips on, hey, I'm a hair and makeup artist, but I also get married and this is what I do. I think, you know, everybody is really going to appreciate that. So thank you. Congratulations. It was so good to speak with you. And we will speak to you again soon.
Thanks for having me.